Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I give you the insider's guide to property investing. Hello, mate.
G'day, buddy. How are you?
Very good. It's my favourite part of the week, to be honest, mate. We get here and shoot the breeze. But last week, I took a pretty heavy heckle from you, didn't I?
0-5. Yeah. Now what are you?
0-6.
0-6.
Did you know Fremantle were $9, paid $9 to for last week's game? I can't remember the last time Fremantle was in that. But,
but Ross Lyon's got it all together. You know, yes. We're on a journey.
Yeah.
We're just going to have to reboot it. Where's that control alt delete key?
Well, the thing is that he's got a... Did you hear his metaphor was property related? He said, we're not rebuilding, we're repacking and re-stumping.
Ah.
So there you go, yeah. Ross Lyon.
And he has a lot of enthusiasm. Yeah. I remember his I've got a lot of enthusiasm for the road ahead.
He'd have to, because we've got to be... But here's the deal, right? I figure it's only fair that I return serve, right? So we've got a listener who's been very gracious and clearly on my side. And so they've sent this little beauty in. So I thought I'd just play it for you, hearing it for the first time, okay?
What do we got?
I love it when Collingwood choke. Ooh. It's football's greatest joke.
How good is
this? They've lost more grand finals 26. Than any other team.
Hang on, it's coming. Listen to this bit.
Choke.
Ready?
And they can't get the ball to cloak. They've got Buckley's chance of winning.
Now I'll call out to Akimanis and then I'll finish. Ready?
Thank you, Brisbane Lions, for 0-2 and 0-3. Seeing those Pies lose back-to-back,
and
owe so much to me.
They were a better side.
Well done,
Akimanis.
Snapping that winning
goal.
Yes.
All right. this video actually goes for 2 minutes and 46 seconds.
All right,
Vlad. Vlad has sent that, so what I'm going to do...
Vlad, you're dead to me.
No. So I've just given Ivis the look. We're actually going to put that up on the Property Couch this afternoon because we can't spend 2 minutes 46. But for all those people who have two teams, their own team and the team playing Collingwood, that's a shout-out for you.
Thanks, Vlad. That was great.
And to all the rugby league supporters that Ben has offended, the rugby union supporters Ben has offended, that's for you as well.
Yeah.
So, mate, I enjoyed that. So thank you, Vlad.
Yeah, and if anyone's got any more, you know, stuff about Collingwood, don't send it in.
And if anyone wants to send in the old, what's the only ship that hasn't come into Fremantle Harbour, the premiership, I've heard it a million times, all right? So no need to send it in. But
mate, you just need to fix your bloody, you know, your theme song. Yeah, you get that right, half the battle's done.
We're going for the number one draft pick. That's what we're doing this year. Hey, lots going on in the property world. Had a great week last week with Jane Slack-Smith. It was great for her to come in.
Yes, it was.
Talk all things property.
Yep.
292,000 downloads.
Yes, thank you everyone for listening and enjoying our content.
And we're constantly in the top 10 for the business news. And we've also got 95 five-star ratings. So we're going to ask a favour.
Yes, we want to get to that 100.
It's two milestones there. 100 five-star ratings.
Takes two seconds. Get on there, go reviews. So search for Property Couch podcast. I know what I'm doing, don't I? And then you just hit the five-star. You go reviews and you hit five-star.
And the download's almost 300,000, Ivis. So we'd love to get to that. But I know that sounds a little bit self-interesting, self-serving.
It is.
But it's just if you're enjoying the podcast, the five-star ratings help us stay in the top 10 all the time so more people can discover us and more people can actually make good decisions around property.
Yeah, not dumb decisions.
That's not a bad thing. Hey, I spoke to a guy last week who is interested in getting some help to build a portfolio.
Yep.
And what I want to say to the listeners is I think anyone who's been invested in our community now for the last 62 episodes, I think they're doing a really great job because one of the biggest things I see is a huge problem for property investors and why people are getting burned is because they outsource their understanding.
Yeah.
And it's okay to outsource the implementation and the execution. That's okay.
Yep.
People are time poor or they might just want to employ someone who can do it better.
I like that.
But don't outsource your understanding. So the story goes like this. He works in the mines.
Yep.
He worked particularly hard at paying off his home, which he'd done very successfully.
Yep.
Someone said you need to save on some tax and buy some investment properties. He had no clue how to do it and probably wasn't that interested in finding out how to do it, would rather outsource the understanding to someone else.
Yep.
Went and spoke to someone and said, I need two investment properties, and within a couple of hours they got him two.
Funny, yeah. Straight off the stock shelf.
Straight off the stock shelf. And he's a really great fella. He's chatted, you know, him and his brother are investing in properties. But he just said, look, I'm really good at doing my job. Mm. I'm really good at providing for my family. I'm really good at paying off the debt. But I just don't have the understanding. And my suggestion to him was, and he's a podcast listener.
Yep.
My suggestion to him was continue to understand the fundamentals of what you're doing, and it's okay to outsource the delivery, but don't outsource the understanding. Yep. So that's a big, clear message to our listeners. And I think anyone who's been 62 episodes on, they couldn't be described of not investing in their own understanding.
I love it.
But that's really, really important.
I think it is. And because what you can then do is you can hold the advisor or the person who's giving you the guidance accountable. I don't know whether I mentioned this last week. I can't remember. I speak to so many people every week, whether I've said it on the podcast or not. But I came across a magazine and a promo piece. And, you know, 90% of it was all really good stuff, some really good content in it. But the asset selection just fell away because it then referred people to buy, you know, off the shelf investment stock, not investment grade properties. So from that point of view, you know, everything right up to that point was great. But if someone had said, well, so why those properties and why do you do what you do? And if it's referred to as tax and depreciation, run a mile. Mm. Because that's not the reason you invest in property. You invest in property for capital growth and income and passive income in retirement. So I think that's a brilliant message, Bryce. So, you know, you can't outsource the understanding. Make sure that the advisor and the person that you're working with is adding value and adding educational value to the conversation.
So the good, I guess, conclusion to that is this particular person is now realising they don't want to outsource the understanding and chatting to us and understanding what we do through the podcast, was very happy to say that they understand it better, could look back in the rear vision mirror and see maybe they would do things a bit differently.
Yeah.
But the good thing is moving forward,
they
can make better decisions.
We do a lot of fixing portfolios, don't we? I mean, if you think about the clients that we deal with, the ones that we get early are great, but we also spend a bit of time in sort of, got a couple of properties, but they're just not going great. And we sort of say, well, yeah, we back to Ross Lyon, we need to reboot.
We need to repack and restump.
And sometimes that's, you know, that's the bitter pill you have to swallow. But the reality is that, you know, there's some tough decisions that need to be made. And I'm not a big fan of selling property for the sake of selling it. If you're going to have to sell, there's an absolute reason that we should be able to prove that that property is a lemon and it's going to underperform and your opportunity cost of doing that is going to be reward for the medium to longer term.
Some of our good points. I think for some of our listeners who didn't listen to our very first episode, and we definitely recommend that you start from episode one and go forward. But we talked about the analogy of the bloke who's doing haircuts for 30 years. Remember that one?
Yeah, I love it.
And
he's given to them again.
He's been cutting hair for 25 years or 30 years. His haircuts are $25. Then all of a sudden someone sets up shop next door, put the shingle out the front, and starts charging $10 for haircuts. So he's got a choice. Does he price match or sort of compete on value and quality? And in the end of the day, his marketing department, i.e. his wife, or, you know, late at night at 3 o'clock, he's come up with his own marketing pitch and puts it out the front and says, $25 haircuts, we fix $10 haircuts. And I think that's the perfect analogy for hopefully what the theme of our podcast is, that we fix $10 haircuts.
Yeah, and we hopefully avoid you for going in and getting that bad haircut in the first place.
Very true, very true. So a couple of things, topical, that I know that you'll be itching to chat about.
Yep.
Interest rates.
Yes. Yeah, so interest rates. So the RBA drop rates to cash rate now 1.757, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
1.75. And what was good news is the majority of the banks are passing on the vast majority of that, which is good news for the economy. And the trigger was deflation. So when you have deflation, that's very concerning for all federal authorities that look after monetary policy. So in our case, it's the Reserve Bank, but the Bank of Japan and the Euro Union and, you know, all of these people, the Fed in America. Deflation is a point in time where the actual cost of goods is actually decreasing. And that signals to these institutions that there's something wrong, fundamentally wrong, or could go wrong. What it also signals out to the consumer is, we'll stop spending. And if we stop spending, that means things are going to get cheaper. I don't know if anyone's ever received that email when petrol prices were really high. There was an email that went around and says, on this date, everyone don't buy petrol for that day, and the value of petrol will go down. Well, that's the biggest problem for, you know, for our sort of central banks. They do not want that. And because of that, and because the long-term trend of inflation has been very low and now below what we would see as an acceptable bandwidth, that gave them the ability to actually drop rates. So they've jumped on that. Hopefully it's a one-off, because you don't want to be in deflationary mode, because the end game of that is stagnation, which is basically an economy in all sorts of strife. So it's a good move. It's a sensible move. From the lender's point of view, congratulations on doing the right thing in terms of passing the majority of that on. But what's interesting, because everyone's going to say, the first question you're going to ask, what's this going to do for property
prices? Perfect storm for property.
Here we go again with property prices. Now, what has been interesting, in the announcements, the actual banks, and I've never seen this before, the banks have actually increased their assessment rates. So even though you can get the retail interest rate lower, the banks are assessing your ability to repay the loan even higher than what it was before. And I think that has the ability to subtly manipulate the market so we don't get that sort of head rush in terms of paying too much for the property. And so I think it's prudent lending from the banks, and I'm sure that they probably would have got a knock on the door from APRA and the RBA to basically make that happen. So from that point of view, I think it's a good thing.
Set the heavies around, I think that is a good thing. So, because easy access to credit is one of the conditions that fuels a boom.
Yeah.
So the assessment rate's being raised, that's a good thing. Hey, just to show the listeners that I always come to you if I don't have an understanding about something.
Yeah.
Question without notice.
Yeah.
I haven't really understood the negative interest rates in Japan, for example. Does that mean it'll cost you money to put your deposit in the bank? Or when you borrow the money from the lender, though, can you unpack that for the listener?
Yeah, sure. So I think for Bank of Japan, they aren't in negative. I don't think that they've. Oh no, sorry, they are 0.1 negative. That's right. I remember that recently. Europe's bigger. So what it means is that they want their bankers. So they want people who on lend money to get the money out of that central bank account. Because usually if banks have got huge amounts of surplus cash, they put it into a bank account, right? Mm. And they earn interest on that. Mm. Now, what the sort of central banks are saying is, get your money out of here. If you leave it here, we're going to penalize you. You're actually going to have to pay us money. So get it out of here and start lending it. So start getting it out in the community, because the reason we play with monetary policy is to stimulate. So if you make money cheaper, airlines will buy planes. Businesses will invest in infrastructure and projects because the return on investment starts to make sense. You and I as investors will look to invest in property because it becomes more affordable, and with the tenant helping us pay for that property, it makes sensible moves. So the negative interest rate play is really about sort of saying, I don't want to see any money parked here, because some of these central banks have been printing money, right? And they don't want it sitting there. They basically want it out to be lent so that can stimulate economic activity, which obviously stimulates jobs, which then pick up tax revenues that can help pay back the debt. So we've got...
So it's a multiplier effect.
Of course it is. And that'll be a good segue into the budget, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But that's what any good economy is trying to do. And when we saw, the very bad time, we obviously had the GFC, and so the bank, the governments, the feds, all of those central banks are trying to stimulate it because they learned a lot about what happened in the Great Depression. And the Great Depression was everyone just stopped. And no one was letting, and everything grounds to a halt. Well, you've got no jobs. It's just a horrible. So this is their best alternative. It's still not a perfect thing because there's still far too much debt. China's got a bit too much debt at the moment, and that's a bit of a concern. I was reading some stuff the other night, and even domestically, I've got some early concerns on, and I've said this before, so it's not new, but certainly areas of the property market that I think have grown too quickly, namely the outer suburb areas. I think there could be some worries if China was to stumble And then, you know, we get the serious cold. It's really important that we live within our means, and that's also as investors that we live within our means. But if there are other investors out there who have been artificially inflating prices in some of these pockets around Sydney, a bit in Melbourne as well, and Brisbane for that matter, that's the challenge we've got. So you're relying on them to live within their means, and if they've geared themselves too high, and APRA are sensible about that. They know that there's been that's why they did what they did, which was a good move.
So negative interest rates doesn't mean to the end consumer, it's just the couple of layers back.
Correct, it's how the money moves around this fine globe of ours.
There you have it, folks, we learn things together. You mentioned the budget. Not exactly a traditional election-style budget.
No, it was a nation-building budget. Mm. Well, no, it wasn't. It was. It's probably setting the right levers for future growth and transitioning.
An eye on the horizon rather than the ballot box.
Yeah, it was pretty boring. Yeah. There's no doubt because, I mean, what you normally like to see in a budget, what's in it for me, as an individual, especially in election year budget, election just around the corner. You normally, there's the cash spurge usually that, I'll buy your vote. What you got here was a pretty good budget around driving jobs growth. And they're not silly. They're still less. I mean, capital expenditure in mining is still set to slow down. And we're still not seeing a great pickup in capital expenditure in manufacturing. So we need to tweak that. So that's obviously where cheaper money for business is a good thing, to be able to hopefully incentivize them to do that. So what you've got here with the tax scales coming down for small business, and the movement of that small business classification from 2 million to 10 million is actually smart. I take, for example, our business price in terms of that potentially could lead to one or two jobs straight away. Mm-hmm.
Is that a call to arms to see who's out there?
Yeah, who's out there? Let us know if you're interested in a job. But ultimately, that's what we're talking about in terms of, and that's about the long game, not playing the short game. We do have a spending problem. We are not, living within our means. And if we put it in very simple terms, it's like we've got two massive credit cards and we're just ignoring them. But we're still trying to survive and put food on the table and do all of the services that we do. So these are tough decisions, and there's just not simply enough money to go around. So how do we do that? Well, again, you play the long game. You basically put more economic activity out there, more stimulus, more incentive to invest in people, and then obviously get the tax receipts from those people, which creates jobs, and then they go off and spend in retail land, and then those persons in retail keep their jobs, and that's how you build sustainable economy.
What I like about the commentary around it is that they're keen to return to surplus. The $21 billion surplus that the John Howard government had seems to be a long time ago, but it puts us in a position of strength, and it helped us get through the GFC, so it's always nice to have a war chest in place.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, we're not politically motivated in either direction. What's interesting there, because they overspent, they had all this money, they could have really done a couple of really smart things, but they pulled too many levers and won the voters of the day, but now we're paying for a bit of that as well. That was a war chest of money that was coming in. You look at Norway as an example. Norway per population are the richest in the world because they've got all this oil reserves. Mm. And they were smart enough to sort of say, well, that oil's for all of us. And so what have you got over there? You've got free university education. You've got amazing infrastructure and well-being. So they know that they're going to be comfortably well off, and that correlates to probably a pretty happy society, except for probably the middle of winter where the whole joint's under snow. It's a bloody cold joint, but good for my ski trips. But
is that a prelude to the sign-off I was going to Norway?
That's the type of thing that people do, and business and government should do. They should look longer term and sort of put some of that money away. I mean, we've got an infrastructure fund and we've got a few things going in that direction, but next time we do get that windfall, which might be 20, 30 years from now, that's what government needs to do. I mean, fast rail, big projects like that that make a real big difference.
Agreed. Four Corners.
Yeah.
Just a call out to the three or four listeners that we've got that watch Channel 2.
Watch Auntie.
Yeah. They did a 60 Minutes-esque story on Monday night. You and I both watched that.
Yep.
And it was interesting because they said the great Australian dream is gone because of the investors. And as far as journalism goes, it was a very, very weighted story towards the negatives of negative gearing, and they didn't. It's a bit disappointing that there wasn't any balance to the positive revenue that comes from the negative gearing story. But I'm sure
it's an interesting one. I actually got a call from a friend of mine who said, "Look, someone from Four Corners might call you and might want to interview for a story that's coming up." And I said, "Sure, you know, let me know." Well, I never got that call. There might have been a reason for that.
Is this episode 51?
So. The reality is, and we talked about this the next day that it happened, is you've got a situation where the concept of affordability and the expectation of the end buyer, you know, in the generational buyer. I mean, they really had a focus on the millennia in terms of, you know, they were I don't know, I can't remember the girl's name, but you know, she'd been to multiple auctions and missed out on Kilsyth, I think.
Kilsyth, yep.
You know, Victoria. And so, look, it's not easy. It's absolutely not easy. But I think if you go through those generational, you know, you do a great story around generational, you know, types and what households were looking for at that time. Do you want to tell
them? Yeah, over the Sunday roast at my house, when I'm at home in Perth with my family and my wife and my children are there, I've got five generations because my dad was born in 1939. So he's pre-baby boom or the builder generation, born in the shadows of the Great Depression. My mum's a baby boomer, I'm Gen X, and I used to think my wife was Gen Y, but I think depending on which definition, she sort of flicks between X and Y, but for the benefit of this discussion, she's Y.
Makes a better story.
And my kids are obviously Z, so there's those five generations, and you think about what my dad valued was, in the shadows of the Great Depression, was all about security. So he wanted to buy his own home. He wanted to pay it off as quickly as he could, and he never wanted to get into debt.
Yeah.
Fast forward to, say, Andrea's generation, Y. They've, you know, you always say 25 years of economic prosperity. They don't know struggle. I mean, I remember being a teenager, listening to Paul Keating saying that's the recession we had to have, and then watch the impact that that had on my pre-baby boomer father, who was security conscious already.
Yeah.
So it really meant that we battened down the hatches. They haven't experienced that. They're, you know, anecdotally, they've always got the Generation Y leave home, or kippers, kids in parents' pockets eroding retirement savings. There's so many pot shots at that Gen Y. But from their perspective, they just grew up in a world that was normal, that economic prosperity was normal. But the challenge is, and it was highlighted in the Four Corners program, is that they want to have the corner office, metaphorically, in property, without sort of working in the mailroom to get there.
Yeah.
And so the view was that, she missed out on a few auctions and she was up against some investors, and that was true. But potentially, they need to start a bit wider and get into the market and use that as a play to get in. We always talk if it's strategic, where they think, okay, well, I need to think two or three moves in advance. I want my dream home to be property number three, for example. What do I need to do now with property number one to make that a reality? Rather than get uber disappointed that number one keeps not working, but their expectations are too high.
Yeah, my dream home was my fourth purchase.
Yeah.
So, I've done the journey, got on the ladder, did the things that I needed to do to make that a reality for me. I want to unpack it sort of a bit like this. Back in the post-war, the Great Australian Dream was a reality, or became a bit of a reality under Menzies, in terms of what they did was they started to subdivide land and people went out and bought houses in the burbs, and they had nice infrastructure, good highways, good roads, everything moved, and the city was a ghost town. So that generation...
Poor people were in the city.
Yeah, the aspiration was exactly right. They're in the working cottages on the fringe of town. So that generation had that aspiration. The next generation that came through started to subtly change in terms of roads got a little bit more congested and so forth, and the city became a little bit more of a place where you could see more infrastructure, more life, more things. So fast forward through that, you got this this change of want and need to move closer to the city. So the millennial generation have grown up with that expectation. And now it's very frustrating for them in terms of the fact that, well, why can't I have what they've got? And the reality is, irrespective of any way you shape the Australian argument, if we do a fly around to any developed mega city around the world, and let's throw them in there, London, Paris, Shanghai, Beijing, Tokyo, Osaka, coming Hobart. Into Singapore, coming Hobart, all our Hobart and Tassie listeners, Bryce, apologise.
No, I'm from Perth. I mean, we always get missed out as well, don't worry about that.
New York, Boston, LA, et cetera. What you get a story of is, you know, and some of those areas don't have negative gearing or whatever. They have a certain policy arrangement that's irrelevant to us, but what happens? That 5-10 kilometre radius from their central business district and usually their finance district is expensive. Mm. And Hong Kong, perfect example, and I've got two rippers for you. Ready? And I saw this a while back, but the most expensive square metre, so $1 million US, where's the most expensive city in the world that will buy you 1 million? So the 18 square metres cost you $1 million US.
Hong Kong?
No, they're number two. You get 24 square metres. Oh. So you get the size of a bedroom.
Percentage-wise, that's pretty significant.
You get the size of a bedroom in Hong Kong for 1 million US.
Yeah.
It's Monte Carlo. Monte Carlo, you get 18 square. So you get the size of a garage, a single car garage for 1 million US dollars.
Wow.
And it goes on and on and on from there. So the reality is that, and I've said this before on the podcast, is that the expectation needs to shift.
Mm.
We are a very vibrant, wealthy society. So do we want to change being wealthy? Do we want to change our living standards and step back so we can let a minority group, a millennial group, even though they're very important to us and they're going to take us, you know, into the future, to change everything so everyone else suffers. In other words, the value of their homes decrease because they need the ability to be able to get in.
Mm.
And the other point I want to make about all these types of media stories is everyone tries to measure up the percentage of how much it costs in terms of time multiples for household income. You know, Ben Knight used an example in Sydney of a particular property that was worth $2 million or something that, and based on the median income of that area. So this is where the data is rubbish in terms of don't look at that income data because obviously a gentrification's happened.
Mm.
And people who go and pay and sign that contract of sale have their lending approved, okay? And the banks haven't radically changed their level of borrowing. In fact, they've reduced it to allow people to be able to buy these properties. So it might sound weird that in that suburb, how can someone afford such a thing? Well, they might have just arrived here and he might be a doctor and she might be a specialist oncologist as well too. And they could comfortably afford it.
Mm.
You know, so don't judge that on, oh my God, we're done. Now, that said, as I said earlier, I am worried about some of the prices that are paid on the fringes where the people are paying too much. And I'm worried that investors have played a role in that.
Mm.
And that's where you're going to see potential corrections like we've seen in other cycle movements.
Mm. Very good point. So I guess we're probably going to see a whole range of stories in the lead up to the election because we've got two sides of politics with hugely diverse views on that subject. So it depends on the journalist's persuasion, really.
Yep, it does.
Very good.
Well, negative gearing. We might as well finish off on the big one, should we?
What? You want me to finish off on the big one?
No, not the Collingwood one.
There we go. Sorry, a bit early, was I?
Yeah, look, so big week for me next week. I'm off to Sydney.
Yes.
Having a meeting with a lot of people around negative gearing. You know, our views on negative gearing, we've talked about it before. So obviously the Liberal Party have made their position that there's no changes to negative gearing. And I don't want people to think that I'm 100% for negative gearing in its current form. And my views are my personal views. I'm not sitting here talking to you as the chair of the Property Investment Professionals Australia. I'm talking to you as someone who is observing this space. But what I am saying is right now, I've got a policy decision, I've got one policy and I've got no change. And no change for me is the right move right now because quite frankly, the data that people are using to assess and model the impact of negative gearing is so ordinary, so lacking in detail, lacking in depth of substance, that it's not worth the modelling that's being done on it. on this side. So that's why I think until we can learn more about it and what we think the possible income and impacts are going to be, keep it as is. But on this side, we've got, you know, this policy document that says that we're going to put we're going to ban negative gearing on anything other than new residential property. And that is obviously a big concern for me and also the people that I'm meeting with in Sydney next week. But what I thought we would do is each week, I just want to highlight maybe a different point in regards to negative gearing to just educate the listeners around that.
Okay.
So the first one I wanted to talk about is the ATO have released some data. They do it every year, but it's normally around 18 months to 2 years late on the tax results of that. So we just recently got the 2013-14 tax results. And that's showing us the impact on what negative cash flow to the government. So that's, you know, this is what they're talking about in terms of what it costs the government to fund negative gearing is effectively what's happening. So what's interesting is because that data is collected for that year, that it was around $7.9 billion at its peaks, but it's now down to, I think from memory, around $3.7
billion.
Wow. So it's coming down, and the reason for that is that interest rates are dropping. But rents aren't dropping, they're just slowing down. So
people are getting positive quicker.
Correct. So, and if you think about that, data was back when interest rates were probably another 1.5% higher than what they are now. So I've sort of just started sort of asking some questions of some people I know to just see if we could do a model variation of that to see whether, in fact, it might be a neutral or maybe even a positive tax outcome.
Wow.
In that medium, that short term. So in other words, the 2015-2016 tax year and the 2016-2017 tax year.
Mm.
So all things equal and lower interest rates for a period of time. And trust me, they're going to stay low for long because the level of debts that we currently hold in households, it's not going to be easy to transition out of that position. So wouldn't that be interesting?
That
you then start to see that, and this is, you know, my biggest point around negative gearing is it is not a strategy. It might be a strategy for speculators, but we're talking to you investors out there. We're not talking to speculators. So it's a tax outcome in that moment in time. And the longer you hold that property moves to a positive position. Okay, so I don't like the conversation purely based on negative gearing. What I like is this idea of, well, that's that moment in time. And now we can see that trend line moving to effectively where it was many years ago, where it was actually positive. It was raising tax revenues.
Mm.
Yet what we also know is that state and federal government support for affordable housing and government housing has fallen off the cliff. It just doesn't exist anymore. So it's been the mum and dad investor who has been able to provide that affordable accommodation and shelter for those who need it.
Mm.
So it's actually a good news story from that point.
So how many people in the room on Monday? You got some heavy hitters?
I've got some good people. I've got some smarter people than me in the room. So
is that possible?
Yeah, well, truly possible.
Well, that's possible. I'm just conferring with Ivis, yep.
Pumping up my tyres there. What are you doing?
No, fluffing your pillows.
Get back to reality.
We gave you a decent rev up at the beginning, so we've got to puff you up again. But, well, that's good, mate. So, obviously, you know, hopefully there's some... What's the key item that you hope to get out of that?
Education. Mm. We want to educate people on the facts.
Yeah.
So, we're going to... You know, the data is really hard to... You know, we're talking 9.6 to 9.7 million dwellings. We're talking historical trends that we're trying to... correlate, and how we currently correlate them is in a medium sense.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult because you can have 15,000 properties in a suburb and you pick a one average number.
Yeah.
So when you get the Grattan Institute report saying it will probably only have a 2% difference in property prices, well, that's right. Because when you move from you know, some of the cheapest houses in Australia being worth $75,000 compared to some of the most expensive houses being worth $38 million, and you average those out, well, moving that average is hard work, you know. So that's the sort of message. So we're just going to look at the facts and try and, you know, put our position out there as a group in terms of how we can educate voters.
Very good. Watch this space, folks. We'll see if we can give you some updates and some outcomes of that. Ben put out an RBA video this week, as he does every month when the RBA announces interest rate movements. So if you want to check that out, that'll be on thepropertycouch.com.au for you to check out. Also, I don't normally do this, but if you want to get that all the time, sent to you by default rather than going to the couch, you can go to the Empower Wealth website. Down the bottom of the page, there's a newsletter that you can sign up for, and you'll get that automatically. But if you want to go to thepropertycouch.com.au, that'll be up there this afternoon also. And as per usual, we let you know on our social media when the episodes come out. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those sort of things. So, mate, I just thought you're normally scrambling around for that piece of paper, so I'll just put some think music for you.
Oh.
All right, I've had enough fun with that.
No, I think it's good. I'll probably come back again. I'm sure there's probably some other videos there too. The what are the could have been champions? They've got a couple of great ones. Might see if I can find a Freo song that they.
Mate, you wait. Nobody spends any time.
I'm worried about Freo.
Mate, it's all tall poppies in Australia, not people who haven't won one. So, where are we going?
Maori.
Oh,
I was over in New Zealand a couple of weeks ago, presenting over there to a group.
Yes.
And so I thought I'd better learn how to say goodbye in Maori.
Do you want to hear my Maori joke?
Go on. Because I'm sure it'll be, if it's as any good as your other lame jokes, it'll be a ripper.
Well, it'll be right up there. It'll be in my category of lame jokes. I can preempt that. So,
okay.
All right, so here we go. What does a hen do? Lays eggs, eh, bro? At least I got a laugh out of
you. I've got it, yeah.
I am a father of two, so clearly a dad joke.
Got it. Brilliant. Yep, he's going to be a great granddad, isn't he? He's going to be right up there, obviously. All right, so we're Maori, and I have no idea about this. So I know kia ora, bro. I know kia ora, that means hello, doesn't it? Or welcome. I mean,
that's your segment.
I'm saying goodbye, so it's hikonara. Hikonara.
Hikonara.
Hikonara. Hikonara.
Got to say it's got a Japanese tinge to it, but yeah. Right.
I don't know.
Hikonara.
Hikonara.
Yeah, no paper says I believe it. So hikonara. Until next week, folks.
Hikonara.
Hikonara. See you guys. Have a great week.
Bye.